Imagine waking up to find out the company that literally promised to democratize AI for the world just locked their absolute smartest model behind a government firewall.
Right.
And simultaneously poached the engineers who built the iPhone to manufacture their own secret hardware. Because, well, that is exactly the morning we are having.
Yeah, it's a lot to process.
Today is Saturday, June 27, 2026, and you are joining us for a deep dive. Our mission today is, well, it's critical.
Extremely.
We've got a massive stack of notes here from today's Tech and Morning newsletter, and we need to extract the actual signal from a total mountain of noise.
Because there is a lot of noise out there today.
Oh, tons. We're looking at six breaking stories today that, you know, on the surface, they might seem completely disconnected.
Right, like AI and space rockets.
Exactly. Massive AI releases, a rebellion in computer chips, console wars, rocket tests, and massive swings in the crypto markets.
It definitely sounds like a chaotic mix when you just read the headlines one by one.
Yeah.
But when you lay all these sources out on the table and really look at them together, a very clear, very singular narrative emerges.
And what is that?
We are standing right in the middle of a violent technological transition.
Mm.
The old kings, like the legacy monopolies that have comfortably dominated the last decade, are falling.
Wow.
And entirely new monopolies are actively rising, and they are ruthlessly vertically integrating to take their place.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because there is no bigger potential monopoly right now than OpenAI.
True.
I mean, overnight, they completely changed the landscape. They didn't just drop a single new model.
No, a whole family.
Right. They drop a whole family of them. GPT 5.6. And it's separated to three distinct tiers.
Which is a huge shift.
Absolutely. You've got Sol, which is the flagship, like the absolute heavy hitter designed for complex coding and deep cybersecurity analysis.
The big guns.
Yeah. Then you've got Terra, which gives you GPT 5.5 level performance, but at half the computing cost. That one's geared for massive enterprise workloads. And then finally, you have Luna, the lightweight, lightning-fast model for everyday tasks on your phone.
Which everyone will use.
Exactly. But here is the massive twist in the newsletter. You and I can't actually touch Sol right now.
Nope.
The U.S. government stepped in and restricted initial access to roughly 20 highly vetted partners for a real-world safety assessment. The public won't see it for weeks.
What's fascinating here is that we are witnessing the exact moment AI transitions from, you know, a monolithic novelty into a mature, segmented utility.
Okay, how so?
Well, for the past few years, the AI industry has been operating on this brute force, one-size-fits-all model. You logged in, you got the smartest model available, and that was it.
Right, you just got ChatGPT.
Exactly. But with Sol, Terra, and Luna, OpenAI is ripping a page directly out of the Amazon Web Services playbook.
Oh, the AWS tiered model.
Precisely. They're pioneering a tiered capability model. They've realized that a startup doing basic customer service text summarization, they don't need the same computational horsepower as a multinational bank running complex algorithmic security audits.
That makes sense. It is classic market segmentation.
It really is.
It's like we are finally moving from this massive, chaotic, all-you-can-eat buffet where everyone is forced to take the exact same plate of food.
Yeah, whether you want it or not.
Right. Moving to a highly specialized menu where you only pay for the calories you actually need.
Perfect analogy.
But I have to push back on this a little bit.
Okay, let's hear it.
OpenAI has heavily marketed this idea of democratizing AI since day one, right?
Hallelujah.
Putting the power of the future into the hands of the everyday person. But if Sol is so incredibly capable that the federal government forces them to lock it behind closed doors...
With the 20 vetted partners?
Yeah. I mean, is that actually democratization? Or is that just, like, marketing spin, while the true frontier-level power remains permanently locked away in the hands of megacorporations and three-letter agencies?
Well, that is the defining tension of this current era.
Right.
What we are seeing is the democratization of the baseline, but the strict privatization of the frontier.
Wow. Privatization of the frontier.
Yeah. And you have to understand that the reason this frontier power is so closely guarded isn't just about software capabilities or national security fears.
No. What else is it?
It is fundamentally about physical resources. Running millions of specialized complex queries on a model like Sol, or even just high-volume consumer queries on Luna, requires an absolutely astronomical amount of computing power.
The electricity alone.
The electricity and the silicon. You simply cannot rely on general-purpose hardware to do that sustainably at a global scale. The bottlenecks are just too severe.
Which brings us to the physical layer of this transition.
Exactly.
The rebellion in silicon. This is the story that actually dropped my jaw this morning.
It's a huge deal.
Because for years, NVIDIA has been the undisputed, untouchable king of the castle. If you wanted to build an AI company, you bought NVIDIA H100 chips.
And you paid a fortune.
Yeah, anywhere from $25,000 to $40,000 a pop. You had literally no other choice.
Until now.
Right. OpenAI just unveiled Jalapeno. It's their first entirely custom computer chip built in partnership with Broadcom.
Yep.
And it is slated for mass production in Q4 of this year, 2026.
It's moving fast.
Unbelievably fast. They aren't just drafting blueprints. They have engineering samples in the lab right now running GPT-5.3 Codex Spark at full production targets.
The underlying physical mechanism behind Jalapeno is really what makes it such an existential threat to NVIDIA's empire.
How so?
Well, NVIDIA's GPUs are incredible pieces of technology, but they are general purpose. They're designed to be great at both training AI models and doing inference.
Wait, let's pause there for a second.
Sure.
Because those terms get thrown around a lot in the news, what is the actual physical difference in the hardware between training an AI and inference?
Okay, think of training an AI like building the ultimate omniscient librarian.
Okay.
To build that librarian, you have to force them to read every single book in existence, cross-reference every concept, and understand how every word connects to every other word.
That sounds exhausting.
It is computationally exhausting. That requires massive, incredibly complex silicon architecture because millions of data points are being updated simultaneously.
Got it. And that's what NVIDIA chips excel at.
Exactly. Now, inference, on the other hand, is what happens after the librarian is fully trained.
When I ask ChatGPT a question.
Right. It's when you walk up to the desk and ask a simple question. The librarian just fetches the answer. They don't need to reread the entire library to do it.
I see.
Jalapeno is strictly an inference chip. OpenAI realized they don't need the complex reading architecture on the chips that are just answering user questions. By specializing solely on inference, they strip away all that wasted silicon.
Meaning the chip is physically smaller, runs cooler, and takes way less power.
Exactly. They are getting 3 to 4 times better performance per watt compared to NVIDIA.
That is insane.
And OpenAI is not alone in this rebellion. Google, Apple, Amazon, Meta, they're all quietly abandoning general-purpose NVIDIA chips for their own custom inference silicon.
So Broadcom is the real winner here.
Broadcom is the silent winner, yeah. As the manufacturing partner helping these giants build the chips, their stock is up 7 times since 2022, purely off this transition.
But hold on. The tech and notes specifically mention that OpenAI is designing Jalapeno to be compatible with all large language models, not just the GPT family.
Yep, that's the kicker.
Meaning an open source model or even a competitor's model could theoretically run on OpenAI's hardware. If that is true, they aren't just an AI software company anymore.
No, they were building an infrastructure monopoly.
Right. It's not about building the fastest trains anymore. They're realizing the real unassailable money is in owning the railroad tracks that every other train company is forced to drive on.
Exactly.
If OpenAI controls the hardware that runs the inference for the entire industry, they effectively tax the entire ecosystem, no matter whose AI model wins out in the long run.
But transitioning from a sleek software lab to a global hardware manufacturing giant is arguably the most difficult pivot a tech company can ever attempt.
Oh, for sure. Software is forgiving, right? You can just push an update if there's a bug.
Exactly. Hardware is unforgiving. To do it, you need the absolute best engineering minds on the planet. You need people who deeply understand global supply chains, thermal dynamics in massive data centers, and physical product design.
Which brings us to the absolute talent bloodbath happening over at Apple right now.
It's unprecedented.
We're reading that Paul Mead, Apple's VP of hardware engineering, a guy who has been there for 15 years, who led hardware architecture for the iPhone, the iPad, and the Vision Pro, is jumping ship next week to join OpenAI's new hardware division.
Massive loss for Apple.
And he is just the latest in a staggering line of defections. He's following legendary designer Joni Ive, Tang Tan, Evans Hanke. Apple's absolute crown jewels are walking out the front door.
To understand why this talent migration is happening, you really have to look at the cultural architecture of these two companies.
Okay, contrast them for me.
Apple is notoriously secretive and deeply siloed.
Yeah.
If you are a brilliant engineer at Apple, You might spend 3 years working on a single camera lens or a thermal module.
And nothing else.
Right. And you might never even see how it fits into the broader product until the day Tim Cook holds it up on a stage.
Wow.
You are a highly paid, brilliant, but tiny gear in a massive machine.
Oh.
OpenAI operates on the complete opposite end of the spectrum.
Much more open.
Yes. They offer deep cross-functional collaboration. You are building entirely new categories of AI-first hardware products from the ground up with full visibility into the software side.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because I hear that, but I have to genuinely challenge the idea that OpenAI's open floor plan collaborative culture is somehow vastly superior for building physical goods.
Fair point.
Apple's intense secrecy and siloed structure is exactly what prevented leaks, maintained their premium aura, and allowed for that intense, hyper-focused refinement that made the iPhone a legendary product.
It worked for a long time.
Right. Can OpenAI really manufacture millions of physical devices while maintaining this open, collaborative software hacker culture? It seems like a recipe for a massive supply chain disaster.
It's a huge risk.
I mean, plus, let's be real about the compensation. The sources note OpenAI is offering salaries roughly 40% above the market average for senior hardware engineers.
That's a huge bump.
Plus, equity in a company currently valued at $157 billion. Isn't this just a money grab?
The financial pull is undeniably massive, I'll give you that. But you have to look at the broader market dynamic that these engineers are observing.
What are they seeing?
The consumer hardware market is actively punishing companies that just push incremental spec bumps.
Oh, like the new phones every year.
Exactly. The engineers at Apple know that consumers are deeply exhausted by the bigger, faster, more expensive cycle of smartphones and premium devices. They want to solve new frontier problems, not figure out how to shave a millimeter off the iPhone 17.
That makes total sense.
And nowhere is that consumer exhaustion with expensive brute force hardware more visible right now than in the absolute slaughter happening in the console gaming wars.
Oh man, the numbers in this console segment are staggering today. Let's look at the Nintendo Switch 2 versus the Sony PlayStation 5.
It's night and day.
The Switch 2 just sold 5.9 million units in the US in its first 12 months. That makes it the second fastest-selling console in recorded U.S. history, sitting only behind the legendary Game Boy Advance.
Unbelievable demand.
In May 2026 alone, the Switch 2 single-handedly boosted overall industry hardware spending by 38%, up to $249 million.
And Sony.
Meanwhile, Sony decided to raise the price of the PS5 by $50, and their unit sales absolutely plummeted by 58% year over year.
Yeah. Nintendo's strategy here is a masterclass in market positioning and really learning from past trauma.
You mean the Wii U?
Exactly.
Yeah.
We have to remember the Wii U, which was a massive commercial failure for Nintendo a decade ago. But they learned a crucial lesson.
What was it?
Mainstream consumers value flexibility and immediate experience far more than they value raw computational horsepower. Sony and Microsoft have spent the last 5 years locked in this brutal arms race over 4K resolution, ray tracing, and raw teraflops.
Okay, wait, stop right there. Because ray tracing and teraflops are the exact kind of marketing jargon that companies use to justify massive price tags.
Very true.
What do those actually mean for the person holding the controller?
Good question. A teraflop is basically a measure of raw mathematical computing speed. It's how fast the console can do math.
Okay, ray tracing is a highly complex rendering technique that simulates exactly how light bounces off objects in the real world, making puddles and shadows look incredibly realistic.
Okay, so it looks pretty.
They are stunning technological achievements, yes. But they require a massive amount of silicon and power to run, which makes the console huge, hot, and very expensive to build.
Right.
Nintendo looked at that arms race and simply walked away.
They didn't even try.
Nope. They delivered an OLED screen, hybrid portability so you can play on a train or a TV, backward compatibility so your old game library works on day one, and killer franchise titles like Mario Kart and Zelda ready to play immediately.
I want you, listening right now, to think about your own tech purchases recently, because the Switch 2 proves a fundamental rule that the entire tech industry just keeps forgetting.
Yep.
Technology is merely a tool to deliver a better experience. It is not an end goal in itself.
Exactly.
Sony essentially built a million-dollar luxury sports car that looks beautiful on a spec sheet, but it's gotten so expensive and cumbersome that no one can afford to drive it.
Great analogy.
Nintendo built a highly reliable, incredibly fun off-roader that you can take absolutely anywhere, and it just works. People don't care about the engine specs, they care about the ride.
It is the ultimate victory of sustainable economics and practical utility over brute force theoretical performance.
And what blows my mind is that this exact transition, this shift away from incredibly expensive, expendable brute force engineering toward highly efficient, sustainable unit economics, is not just happening in video games.
Not at all.
It is the exact same underlying mechanism completely rewriting the rules of the aerospace industry right now. Let's talk about SpaceX.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, both of these industries are going through a violent maturation process.
Right. So looking at the tech and notes, SpaceX just successfully completed an 18.5-second static fire test on their new Starship version 3 engines.
Which is huge.
They've already executed 12 launches in 2026 alone, which is a blistering record-setting pace. And the economics they are projecting here are genuinely mind-bending.
Let's hear the numbers.
Because of full reusability, meaning they catch the booster and land the ship to fly them again like commercial airplanes, they are projecting they can drop the cost of a space launch to under $10 million a flight.
To understand how revolutionary $10 million a flight is, you have to look at the legacy model.
Right, the old NASA way.
Historically, spaceflight was a government-run monopoly. It was completely risk-averse, incredibly slow, and entirely expendable.
Expendable meaning they threw it away.
Meaning, for decades, NASA and legacy contractors would spend billions of dollars building a single rocket, launch it once, and let the entire multi-million dollar machine burn up in the atmosphere or crash into the ocean.
It's the equivalent of United Airlines buying a brand new Boeing 747, flying you from New York to London, and then just throwing the entire airplane into the Atlantic Ocean after one trip.
Exactly. The ticket prices would have to be astronomical just to break even. And SpaceX's Starship V3 is designed to end that era completely. A static fire test, by the way, is when they lock the massive rocket firmly to the launch pad and ignite the engines at full thrust just to prove the plumbing and the pressures hold together without actually taking off.
No flying involved.
Right. By testing iteratively like this, blowing things up on the pad, and prioritizing the recovery of the vehicle, they are forcibly maturing the space industry into a commercial, airline-like operational model.
Wow.
They are substituting expendable hardware for sustainable economics. And this concept of maturation, of moving from reckless hype to sustainable fundamentals, leads us perfectly into the final and perhaps most volatile sector in our stack today.
The crypto markets.
Yes. Yeah. The notes highlight a major, highly fragmented rebound happening in crypto today. The baseline is that Bitcoin is stabilizing near $60,000.
Pretty solid.
But the real stories are in the decentralized finance layer, specifically Avi and Solana. Avive's token surged 19% in 24 hours.
Massive jump. Why? Because Kraken, which is a massive traditional crypto exchange, is looking to take a 15% stake in the protocol at a $385 million valuation. Plus, Ahive is proposing a token buyback.
Interesting moves.
And on the other side, you have Solana, whose token went up 10% on the news that tokenized stock trading on their network hit $2.5 billion. But, and this is a big, the sources have a massive warning regarding Solana.
Yes, the on-chain metrics, which is the actual transparent data of what is happening inside the network, tell a very different story for Solana.
What are they saying?
Despite the price of the token going up on the news of tokenized stocks, their total value locked actually dropped heavily. From $8 billion down to $6.2 billion.
That's a huge drop.
And simultaneously, their decentralized exchange trading volume fell by 23%.
Okay, before we analyze that divergence, let's define total value locked, or TVL, because it's a metric that gets thrown around constantly.
Good idea.
Is it basically the crypto equivalent of deposits in a traditional bank?
That's a really great way to think about it. Total value locked is the actual tangible amount of capital that users have actively deposited into the smart contracts of a specific network to earn yield or facilitate trades.
Got it.
When TVL goes down, it means capital is fleeing the ecosystem. Users are pulling their money out.
So what does this all mean for the listener trying to read the market? We are looking at a massive divergence in behavior here.
Definitely.
Alav is acting like a maturing traditional corporation. They are securing real institutional investment from Kraken. They are executing token buybacks.
Right.
In traditional finance, when a company does a stock buyback, they use their revenue to buy their own shares off the open market, which reduces supply and rewards long-term holders. It's a fundamental business development move.
It shows maturity.
But Solana, Their token price went up because of a flashy headline, but their actual user activity, the TVL and the trading volume, the fundamental health of the network, is rapidly shrinking.
This raises an important question about how we evaluate value during a macroeconomic transition. During any technological shift, speculative capital always flows toward the loudest, shiniest narrative. Solana has a great narrative right now with tokenized stocks.
Right.
But gravity eventually catches up with speculation. The protocols and companies that actually survive these brutal macroeconomic pressures. And remember, we are dealing with high interest rates and negative funding rates across the derivatives markets right now are the ones building sustainable mechanics.
And let's quickly unpack that term, negative funding rates, because it's vital context.
Sure.
In the crypto derivatives market, a negative funding rate essentially means that the traders betting the price will go down. The shorts are literally paying a premium to the traders betting the price will go up.
Right.
It indicates that the overwhelming sentiment of the market is heavily bearish.
Exactly. When the market sentiment is that heavy and the macroeconomic pressure is that tight, hype alone will not save you.
Yep.
Just like in the console wars, just like in aerospace. Flashy surface numbers cannot hide fundamental underlying weaknesses forever. The survivors will be the ones prioritizing utility over speculation, like Amive securing real institutional partnerships.
Which brings this entire deep dive full circle.
It really does.
We started this morning talking about a world that had completely reshuffled itself overnight. And the ultimate takeaway from all of these sources, from OpenAI's tiered pricing model to the custom silicon infrastructure rebellion to the shift in consumer hardware, reusable rockets, and the maturation of decentralized finance, is that for you, continuous learning is no longer an optional side hobby.
It is baseline survival.
Yes. The skills, the mental models, and the legacy monopolies that made you or your business valuable 5 years ago are being actively dismantled right now.
We are witnessing the transition from theoretical breakthroughs to practical deployment across the board.
Everywhere you look.
AI is leaving the research lab and becoming segmented enterprise infrastructure. Space is leaving the realm of national prestige and becoming a commercial logistics network. Finance is testing decentralized utility against traditional banking mechanics.
And that ties perfectly into the core philosophy of our tech and sources today. Do not just chase every shiny new object.
Right.
Do not buy a piece of hardware just because it has the most teraflops. And do not invest in an ecosystem just because the token chart is green today.
Look deeper.
Ask yourself how these specific technologies, a lightweight Luna AI model for your daily workflow or a hybrid console for your commute, can solve real, tangible problems in your own life or business.
Because utility and sustainable economics will always outlast the hype cycle.
Always. But before we let you go, I want to leave you with one final puzzle to mull over.
Something to think about this weekend.
Exactly. Something that isn't explicitly spelled out in the headlines today, but is hiding right there in the subtext of everything we discussed.
Think about the pieces moving on the board right now. OpenAI is building the smartest, most capable frontier AI models in the world.
Right.
Now, they are partnering to manufacture their own custom jalapeno silicon chips to run those models cheaper and faster than anyone else.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, they are aggressively poaching the world's absolute best hardware engineers from Apple to build the physical consumer devices.
So the question you have to ask yourself this weekend is this. What happens when the company whose stated founding mission was to democratize AI for humanity quietly builds the software models, owns the computing hardware, and manufactures the consumer devices?
And in the process.
Becomes the most vertically integrated, unassailable, powerful monopoly in human history.
It is a transition worth watching very, very closely.
It absolutely is. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. We hope this helps clear the morning fog, separate the signal from the noise, and get you ready for what's next.
Thanks for listening.
Stay curious, keep questioning the changing world around you, and we will catch you on the next one.